It's the Marketplace Tech Podcast for Tuesday the 22nd. I'm Ben Johnson in New York. Today we'll have news on profits from one of the world's biggest telecom companies, AT&T. And while investors expect growth, the company has faced some challenges to its revenue model from other carriers like T-Mobile. Bill Menezes is senior research analyst at Gartner. He'll be looking at how AT&T is doing when it comes to getting its own customers to come back for more.
So what they're trying to do is get more devices on the network, get the subscriber who has a smartphone to add a tablet or to add a home security system that ties into the cellular network.
Menezes says with smartphone use at an all-time high, part of the game for big carriers is poaching from competitors. Today's numbers may give a sense of AT&T's record on that front as well. Who would have guessed that the title of America's funniest city would be determined with the help of a humorless algorithm? Researchers at the University of Colorado's Humor Research Lab pulled data on comedy club locations, birthplaces of famous comedians, and where funny people live. And Chicago took the cake. But can an algorithm really identify what's funny or even crack a joke? We decided to ask somebody. Dr. Chris Hammond is a computer science professor at Northwestern University. He's also the chief scientist at Narrative Science, a company which uses algorithms to turn data sets into stories that look like they were written by humans. Chris, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So first, I want to congratulate you for being from what apparently is the funniest city in the United States.
Oh, thank you very much. I would take off the word apparently. I would just say the funniest city in the United States.
Well, you know, we're in New York, so I have to catch it a little bit. What are the areas that remain challenging for an algorithm, even one that displays some machine learning, to identify things like irony or sarcasm?
Oddly enough, irony and sarcasm end up being two of the most difficult things for a machine to recognize. So if I say, I adore Chicago winters, that's sarcastic. But of course, you can't tell the difference by looking at those words unless you have a fairly deep understanding of me and Chicago and winters. However, if you stop thinking about it as, I'm going to make a machine that's funny and turn it into, I'm going to build a machine that will make this one tiny kind of funny.
What's the deal with...
Oh, absolutely. Once you see that there's a framework there, then you can start thinking about, okay, how can I have other examples within this framework?
So do you think that someday a robot will walk into a bar and sign up for the open mic, but that robot's jokes will all be the same kind of jokes?
I mean, if it's going to walk into a bar and sign up for open night, it better not be the same kind of jokes. No, but if you take a look at the arc of a stand-up's performance, you can identify little sort of knife edges along those phases where you could find a joke, build a joke. Would you like me to really make a prediction?
Yeah.
I would say within a year we'll see something that looks like a comedic engine.
Wow.
And there'll be, I think, a niche that will be filled up with computer humor.
Dr. Chris Hammond is chief scientist at Narrative Science. He's also a professor of computer science at Northwestern University. Dr. Hammond, thank you very much.
Oh, thank you.
It's been a few weeks now, but the Heartbleed security bug continues to haunt our logins. Just this week, users of healthcare.gov were advised to reset their passwords to protect against potential hacks. A lot of people are thinking about the scope of popular internet tools like OpenSSL impacted by Heartbleed and how we can use them. Our friend and Harvard professor Jonathan Zittrain has a working analogy.
Many of the things we encounter online and that let us do things online are built out of building blocks. They're kind of like Legos.
And in some ways, that's the beauty of the internet.
Absolutely. It's this modularity that means people can spend their time not reinventing wheels. You can take a wheel that's already been invented, put it into your software, and make sure that the effort you're expending is doing new stuff. It does, however, mean that there are certain components that are so commonly desired that should there be a problem or a defect, now it's a monoculture. So the most recent example of this is OpenSSL. This is a basic piece of software that incorporated into other stuff is what facilitates secure encrypted communications between one point and another, often your browser and the website that you're talking to.
So what does the Heartbleed bug teach us about what the problems are in a monoculture, and how can we fix it?
Well, it's important to remember that in the analog world, it's not like we had perfect security.
True.
You would pay your bills back in the day by scribbling something on a piece of paper and putting it in an envelope that you seal with spit. And the difference probably is that some of these bugs turn out to be a latticework, that it's present in so many places you didn't expect.
So what can be done, though?
So I think the key would be to facilitate an insurance market. Many of the losses that could happen are basically economic losses, and they're the kinds of stuff for which, just like fire is a risk, that you can try to reduce the risk, but it occasionally happens, you have insurance for it.
Harvard's Jonathan Zittrain. Jonathan, thank you very much, sir.
Thank you, Ben.
And before we go, two guys in England thought they'd found the Loch Ness Monster making waves on an Apple Maps satellite image. Their discovery went viral, but further review suggests an imaging glitch removed the boat, making the wake. Keep looking, dudes. I'm Ben Johnson, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.